Om Shanti. Good evening, and good evening to everybody watching. So great delight to have Brother Ken and Sister Luciana with us, and we'll be extracting a few gems from them. But I think first of all, Ken, how does it feel like having your voice booming out when you're conducting yoga?
I can, the questions. I'm a ventriloquist. But I was just thinking in that song, how Baba is so magical. Because I don't play piano, but I wrote that song for piano. And actually, I wrote the poem first, and then I put the music. So, just Baba touches the soul. The sanskars must be there somehow, that I can picture the song in my mind. It's a lovely experience if you get around to writing songs.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you for that. Today actually is Dadi Nirmalshanta's day, the day that she passed on, Baba's daughter. And I don't know if you have much interaction with her, or if there's anything you want to say about her, or the other aspect. Well, maybe that first, if there's anything, even your impression of her. Then I have another question related to the Dadis. Anything you can remember?
I didn't have much interaction with her much.
Okay.
All of us saw her very dignified, very, very sweet, very gentle, very, I would say, subtle. That's the impression I had of her, but I didn't have much interaction. I only went to Kolkata a couple of times too, so I didn't have much interaction with her. I don't have much to say, to tell the truth.
Okay. Luciana, anything?
I also didn't have much interaction with Dadi Nirmalashanta. But of course, I saw her many times in Madhuban. But she didn't have much the role of giving classes.
Yes, true.
So we would see her more on the stage when Baba would come, and of course that loving feeling of the similarity physically with Brahma Baba, and the stories that we would know about her, how Baba used to, before when he was Dada Lekaraj, that he used to do a lot of his jewelry and have hair as the model for the jewelry. And so in that sense, she would be showing to others, and others would be interested, and how she had that courage to come out from a marriage, a relationship that it was with someone very high in terms of society, and when she recognized Brahma Baba and his role, then the courage that she had, and even like she lost many of the privileges when Baba became the instrument of Shiv Baba, because Baba stopped giving her that extra attention that he used to give when she was his Laukik daughter. But there is one specific story that I heard in one of my early days in Madhuban that impressed me very much. When she was telling her story and her experience, and it was that in the beginning she didn't recognize Baba, but then one day she was in her room and she had a vision of Sato Brahma coming to her. And that vision that she had of, or that experience, of having Sato Brahma coming to her in her room, in her bedroom. It was like something that ignited in her the recognition. But the amazing thing it was that she went to bed with black hair and she woke up next day with her hair completely white.
I didn't know that story.
You didn't know? No. I mean, I heard personally from her. So personally she told that story, and that created so much impact in me, on me, because, you know, I thought, I wonder if some of my transformation would come just like that. You go to sleep and you wake up next day completely transformed. That would be wonderful, you know.
We'll see what color if your hair turns black by tomorrow morning.
So this became like in my memories about her.
Uh-huh. I heard that story too, but... I think, you know, I didn't think much about it, to tell the truth.
In each one, it had a different impact. And for me, it was a big impact, because that's what I remember 40 years ago.
I'm curious, who here has heard that story? Anybody? No, I haven't heard that story. Gosh. Thank you for that. Thank you. New story. Wonderful. But I'm also remembering that, you know, the early days of Brazilian, of service in Brazil, and you were really, Luciana, the first, well, Ken, the first instrument to go there, then you were the first one to emerge, and I also remember Goody, our dear Goody, who passed on. But I remember that Daddy G used to give a lot of attention to both of you. And so I think the question to Ken and Luciana, do you remember special things that Daddy G did or said to encourage you, or that Bap Dad had said to encourage you in those very early days, being the first instruments, and what was that, or how did that feel?
Well, for me, I definitely have many, many things to talk about Daddy G. Because when I first went to Matabane, I was the only foreigner there. And Daddy Janky was not, didn't have the role of being in charge of the service outside of India. That role didn't exist there because there wasn't much service outside of India. So Daddy G was overall in charge of everything. And when I went back to Australia from here, I went to Matavan after only three months in Gyan, and got back to Australia after 4 months in Gyan, and the centre there folded, stopped, finished. And so I wrote to Daddy G, and I was only 5 months in Gyan. I said, Daddy, I'm going to start a centre, because I knew that I needed to create a community. And so my interaction was with her. And she, early 76, she must have been very curious, because she came to Australia in 1977. That was when Charlie left London, went back to Australia. He got there 18 months after I did. And we arranged for Daddy to come. And so she must have been very curious, because it was the first non-Indian centre in the whole world. There were no Bharatwasis, none. Now there's stacks of Bharatwasis in Australia, like here, it's the same. But in those days, Australia had a racist immigration policy. So only white people could go to Australia as immigrants. The first time I saw a Negro was here in England. So that close connection was there from the early days. She invited me to go to with her to the Kumbh Mela. She got all of the Australians together. It was the first group from Australia. And I was just so impressed because she got all of them together and said, will you allow me to take him, me, because I was the leader of the group, to go with me to the Kumbh Mela? And of course, you know how Australians are. Take him.
Off you go.
Off you go. What's the problem? But it was so touching, you know, there's such humility. I mean, who? But anyway, that sort of connection was there. And actually, Daddy, in 1982, and again in 84, Daddy invited me to stay permanently in Madhuban. But Daddy Janki said, nothing doing.
She had got her role by then.
She was already back in her role. Or in the role. So very loving, very, you know, very close connection with Daddy G. She was the reference. I didn't really have that strong connection with Daddy Janki because I was only here for 3 months. So the early years, my reference was Daddy G.
Luciana, you first met Daddy G in
when
Madhuban.
When I first met Daddy G, it was when I first went to Madhuban. And
so which year was that?
That was beginning of 81, because I came in Gyan June 79, but the first year I couldn't make, so it was Sister Genty invited me and a very small group of people. Aidan was in that group, Fiona was in that group, and a few others. We were about 7 or 8 who went with Sister Genty to Madhuban before the season, and then we went to Delhi for that big Maha Mela in the Red Fort. So my first meeting with Daddy G, it was interesting because she resembled very much my grandmother from mother's side. So I became it was a great impact to see my grandmother's features, so similar physically they were. And Daddy heard something about me, which I don't know the details of it, but I think something on the line that I came from a good family or something like this, that she called me to talk to me at the courtyard, like she normally used to talk to people. And she started to ask me many questions about my father, his profession, how much money he had, my mother and my sisters and so on. I became so shocked, you know. Because I was expecting to hear some spiritual things from her. And here she was investigating about me and so on. And then I told her that I was a Hatha yoga teacher. And next morning she organized for all the daddies, Manoha Daddy, Ratan Mohini Daddy, Didi, herself, and Little Mohini, to be in her room, bedroom, and she made me to have a demonstration of Hatha Yoga. And she and Manoha Daddy would follow me, whatever I was doing, they were copying. So, you know, like it was unique. Here you have the leader of such an organization completely out of the parameters, let us say. And also, I had this feeling that Ken was saying about her easiness, about her humility, that touched me deeply because, I mean, she was just so accessible. She was like the real leader that would not be fake, you know. It was so genuine. And that was the feeling that I had from her. And just one more experience, two more experiences, short ones. One, it was that now I realize what a fortune it was that she would know my name. It seems like a small thing. But you know, like, we are so many, and the yagyin grew so much. We are a little bit incognito amongst the group. Even this morning when I was in the Murli, I was thinking like this. I was thinking, there was a time that I used to come to London and stay 1-2 months during Raksha Bandhan time, and I knew everyone's name. And nowadays it's not so, you know. I don't know everyone. And so the fact that she knew my name, she knew that I come from Brazil, and she would always, you know, with a smiling face, would say, Bari Dil should call Brazil Bari Dil.
Very
country
dumb.
With
big
a big heart.
Heart.
But one more thing that used to touch my heart, it was that it was a time that they were available for us to go into their rooms before Murli. And Didi Manmohini, she was very serious, very official, and I didn't have the courage to go into her room. I remember Brother Charlie would go and tell many stories, you know, about Didi. But I didn't have that courage to enter the room. But Daddy, I was one of the few double foreigners that would be at her door waiting to the point that she would come out from the shower and she would dress her sari in front of us. While speaking, while sharing, and that was just so amazing. You know, her naturality, her greatness, that she was not concerned about anything and anyone's opinion. I mean, for me,
so many stories. She came to Brazil first time. It was 1984. And she saw that there were so many students, right, who couldn't go to Madhavan. It's too expensive. Really, only the wealthy ones could make it to India.
And we were all young at that time.
Yeah, no one had a good job even. But when she saw that, she immediately arranged the next year for Daddy Gulzar to go. Daddy was I was meeting Bab Dada in between 84 and 85, so thanking Baba for allowing Daddy Gulzar to go to Brazil. And I said, Baba, you know, there are a lot of your children there that can't come here. So when Daddy is in Brazil, can you not
pop down
and, you know, give some drishti at least. You know what Baba said to me? He said, more or less, he said, don't tell me what to do. Baba said, Baba knows what his role is.
You must have felt a bit. How did you feel then?
Well, the thing is that when she was there, she... everyone felt there was something very special when she offered Bhog, you know.
Which
and then there was
third
a long
Sunday,
third Sunday. The meditation was so powerful. We thought Bab Dada was there, but anyway, this probably could be a myth.
But
you
it doesn't matter.
You mentioned
it's the experience.
That, pardon?
It doesn't really matter if it was a myth or not. It's the experience.
No, everyone had the experience, but yes. Didi Manmohini was very special. And I always remember when I first, a few meetings, several meetings. In those days, there were no classes as such. We didn't have classes. I can't remember classes in Madhuban in the 70s. They were sort of get-togethers only, and picnics.
True, actually. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's true.
Just chit-chats and picnics. Sitting down for a class, or yoga bhati, that was it. No classes, you know, with topics and so on like they have it nowadays. Panels and blah, blah, blah. But it was one of the meetings I had with Didi. I always remember because she gave me, she said, put out your hand, I'm going to give you 2 tollies. Oh, 2 tollies. So we were really interested in tollies in those early years, right? And actually she gave me, what? How do you call that one that's made up of little fried balls?
Oh, bundi.
Bundi.
Bundi ladu.
Yeah, the bundi ladu. And she, you know, it's just held together by the syrup, right? In a ball, and then it's sort of dried out. She said, open your hand. And I, okay. She put 2 in my hand, 2 of these. And she said, now close your hand really tight. And of course, what happened to the bundi ladu? What happened? They disintegrated, right? And she said, and this is how she taught. She said, if you try to hold the sweetness of the world and the sweetness of Baba at the same time, they will destroy each other.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm looking at these disintegrated toys in my hand. I mean, what a lesson. She said 1 sentence and did 1 thing, you know. It's like a very creative way of saying you can't have your foot in 2 boats at the same time. So Didi was like that. She wouldn't conduct drishti like doing a searchlight, just look straight ahead. So I asked her once, Didi, what are you doing when you're conducting meditation? She says, I'm giving drishti to the whole world. That was Didi. Mm. Very powerful.
Beautiful. Thank you. Special memories. Ken, I remember that once you said, it's a good few years back, I've made a decision that I'm never going to let my happiness go. Do you remember that? It was a good one. I remember it had an impact on me. So I'm just wondering how it's going. Or it stays.
No, it's sort of, you know, it's very hard for me to not remain okay.
What's the secret?
Like being stable and pretty much most of the time. And so I don't know, maybe it's some sanskar, maybe.
What's that? Even when your luggage was lost, Paresh is asking.
No, that's happened several times over all of these years. But pretty much, yeah, even, yeah, really severe tests. I remember even here in London was a time when the IRA were bombing pubs and stuff in the 80s. We had an office in Baker Street, remember?
Mm, very well.
For the Global Corporation for a Better World. Must have been 88, was it? 87?
No, I think that, yeah, 88, 89. Yeah. Till 91, I think.
So I went down to the office. I was here in London. And again, like Luciana, I will spend much more time here than I do these days. So I was just going down to the office to see how everything was, to get some information so that I was going to go back to Brazil, and then we were implementing it here and there and everywhere. And as I pull into the station in Baker Street, we hear over the loudspeaker in the station, we have information that there is a bomb in this station. Could you, everyone, leave the train? Don't panic. And what do you think people did? You should have seen them. They were jumping over each other to try to get out of the station.
My God.
And my thought processes were like this, and this is pretty normal when something sort of crazy happens. I sort of go into a slow motion thinking, they say that there's a bomb in the station. Look at these people jumping on each other to try to get out. I'm not going to go that way. I'm not going to go up those stairs where those people are jumping on each other. I'll wait. If the bomb explodes, it will explode. Nothing I can do. If it doesn't explode, fine. But I'm not going to go into that melee, right? That craziness. So I just waited and I walked back. Actually, there was an exit at the other end, so I walked back in the opposite direction. But that's a pretty difficult situation. That's generally how I react. I don't lose the cool. Pardon?
Did the bomb go off? That's a question.
Obviously not.
Are you still here? It was quite a common occurrence, actually, in those years. You know, I was never in that situation, but, you know, you go and this station's closed, don't go here. You know, in the 80s in London, it's happened several times.
Later on, I was once in Bogota. And we're in the middle of the mall, and there's this almighty explosion. And they'd just blown up a building a block away. So reading the mall, what's going on? And it was because there's been a civil war in Colombia for 50 years, 45 years or something. It just finished a couple of years ago, actually. It was the leftist guerrillas and the right-wing guerrillas and the government and the police and the narcos. They were all fighting it out, and they kidnapped one contact of Baba, and they killed him. They kidnapped Maria Cristina's cousin, who'd been the president of the country. They kidnapped him and held him for ransom. Like that was the time. And so he's sitting there in the morning, like the building was like a block or two away. And it was like a 10-story building. They blew it up completely. And it was the police headquarters. So you think about it. So, explosion. What's going on? And of course, we just stayed. We've had lots of interesting experiences in that part of the world.
Mm. Thank you. Luciana, you're really hands-on with a lot of people, making things work and so on. You come across many different sanskaras. Like here, I always say it's an ocean of sanskaras. Yeah. What keeps you steady and stable in the midst of all of that?
Yes, I'm sure it's the experience of all of us to have to enter in relationship with all kinds of sanskaras. In a way, I have a strong sanskar as well, in the sense of a strong personality. And maybe this is one of the reasons why I resonate so much with Daji Janki, because she was very intense. And I'm of this kind of personality, quite intense in whatever I do, my opinions and so on. But at the same time, I realized with time, with maturity, with all the experiences of life, that we really have to allow other people to do whatever they want, and we cannot change anyone. And also, you know, this came with time, because I came to Baba very immature, 23 years old, and not a big experience of life. And I think that just the maturity of the age and the experiences just gave me a lot of acceptance of other people. And also because I've done quite many mistakes in my Brahmin life of different
really?
Kinds.
I don't know anybody else who has.
So I think that that also gave me more maturity and more humility to accept whatever others do wrongly, and also to understand the different interests of other people. I can give one example that happened now. Just before I came to this hall, one brother there sent me a message saying that he and another brother, they wanted to go for a kind of sightseeing tomorrow. Both of them have motorcycles, Harley Davidson. And they wanted to come to our retreat place, which is about 2 hours, 2 hours and a half. From the city where they live. And he just popped me a message saying if they could come and have lunch at the retreat place. And then we engaged in a little conversation. I said that yes, most welcome, you can come to have lunch. But then I just said something, but what is the interest in coming, traveling 2 hours and a half, just
for
a sightseeing. He said, because you don't know what it means to drive a Harley Davidson.
Also, the area weather, it's absolutely spectacularly beautiful. So, and hills and curves and like tropical whales,
you could
say.
On the weekend, there are many motorcycles there because it's a very curvy kind of road.
They love it.
Like to go it. You know, so I did have some interest when I was 15 years old in motorcycle. And I remember that I asked my father if I could have one. And my father said, when you are 18, I give you a car, but a motorcycle, never. It's very dangerous. That was the answer then. So I told him, yeah, I did have interest in motorcycle when I was 15, but definitely now in confluence age, I would never think about traveling 2 hours and a half and then 2 hours and a half to go back just for a sightseeing, you know? So he said, okay, fine. I said, but it's still you're most welcome to come and have lunch. So it's just like, you know, you have to accept that each one has a different interest in life, different positions.
But you should see one of their motor. He's got, it's so sophisticated. He has a sound system that he can, yeah, it's actually, he can listen to music while he's driving along on his motorcycle. It's so sophisticated. Probably costs more than a car. He's one of those bikes.
Yeah, but just to say, so many different sanskars, and we do have to relate and to have all these acceptance with the differences. Yeah, there are many, many stories about that, and I think that I grew a lot with the years in that sense.
Yeah, I know something that Daddy Janki said to Sister Jenti, and she practices it till now, as far as possible, say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good mantra, and that's
good
a
mantra.
Very good reason to say no. Yeah. You were earlier on today talking about the concept of complementarity, and in a way, so I'd like you to explain, well, both of you, a little bit more about it, and that is it that in a way you, I can see that you also complement each other, different personalities, but is complementarity a sort of thing where you fill in the gap where the other person doesn't have that particular talent, or is it that you look for where the sanskaras harmonize, or you appreciate what Baba sees in each one? You know, how does this concept of complementarity work?
All of these. Because then we realize that none of us have all the talents, and our virtues are not all in the same degree, and not all of us have interest in doing the same kind of activity in service. So I think that complementarity, first of all, give us that attitude of humility to accept that others are better than you in some areas, and also to accept that not all can play the same role, and also gives us the feeling of harmony, because you are not competing with others in terms of your role and your position and so on. I can give my example with Brother Ken. We have been together, working together for so many decades now. But of course, in my position, I do have to take class. I do have to give lectures. And I do that because of my role, not because of my interest. I prefer to be more at the back, organizing, planning, you know. So whenever it's possible, I am more at the back, and Ken is at the front. But of course, I have to do many of the things as well. But in this way, there was never that competition in terms of disputing my position and his position. And even though we have very much the similar way of understanding Baba's Maryadas and Baba's Srimad and what is best, and 99% we would have the same thought, the same idea about a situation, for instance. But it's very clear for me that Ken is senior, more senior than me. So if in any situation, which is rare, we would have different opinions, we would be selecting or choosing what Ken thinks, because he's more senior. So in this way, and also, you see, other aspects also, Ken has a natural inclination of doing some kind of activity, like for instance, cooking. I was never someone much interested in the kitchen, just to eat, and not to cook. Even in my Lockheed home, another sister that is 1 year younger than me, and you know how in the house we help our mother and so on, especially because my mother divorced. We were quite young. I was 14, my sister was 13. So we would have to help in the house, and my sister would be always helping in the kitchen, and I would always be helping in the cleaning or the decoration or things like this. So it's just whatever also pleases you and whatever you do with more easiness and with less time. Rory Ken is very quick in the kitchen, for instance. So I think that this complementarity helps us to work in teams, work in a group, for instance.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful. But can I ask Ken then just to expand on another aspect of that? How do you then within that make sure that you don't get dependent on somebody because there's a complementarity? So this is the person I need to be with. This is, how do you maintain that discipline?
I think I'm very naturally detached.
Yes, you are actually.
And I see that there's one aspect that we often confuse in trying to get along with others. We think that harmonizing is something we have to do between, let's say, I'm a timid sort of person and I have to live together with someone who's very, very, I wouldn't say aggressive, but very untimid.
Forceful,
yeah. And so you adjust your timidity to the other person's forcefulness and you call that harmony. It's not.
Mm.
Harmony is not between defects. Harmony would be between virtues and especially the divine qualities. So I see that it's possible to get along with anyone if I see past their personality. For me, it's a little bit different than from Luciana. For me, it's not a game of personalities, but to try to see behind, because all of us have different depths. There's the surface stuff, which is the very recent stuff, even from even stuff from this birth. Then there is the stuff from the subconscious that's deeper, that you can see that whatever comes up on the surface comes from something deeper. Anger, for example, has a history. All of the different quality virtues and defects have histories. How many times have we been angry in 63 births? How many times have we had attachment? How many times have we had children? How many times have we had mothers, fathers, friends, bosses, assistants, and so on? So many times. So there's stuff that's on the surface, which is okay, you can take that into account, but we should never be fooled by the appearances. Then there's stuff that's been around for a long time. That you can see some souls have a, you know, chronic story of their own. Let's say some people are chronically sad, or some people are chronically extrovert, whatever. But you can see that comes from a long way, maybe. And there's the deepest level, which is the original qualities. So for me, getting along with others, I don't necessarily think it's an effort to compliment people, but to see people's depth, and then I can get along with them better. So that's the sort of thing that I try to do.
Thank you.
And it sort of works out most of the time. I don't get too much involved in these days. I'm looking after all of Latin America, so that keeps me sort of not exactly focused in one particular situation. I have to see lots of things at the same time. It's a lot of things going on. But it seems to work out, you know, that sort of thing. And so I'm busy with my stuff and others are busy with their stuff, and then sometimes we have to do stuff together. But I just really, Luciana's really good at what she does, and I just am happy that she's doing well what she does. I just am happy.
Thank you. Okay, I guess a final question. You've both had a lot of experience in Gyan, and of course now just being in Madhuban and everything. So what really in your heart is your deep effort right now? What's really touching you at the moment?
I think that for me there is one main attention that started during the pandemic, that I saw destruction very close, and it was as if everything that we have been hearing in the Murlis and from Baba, and Baba speaks about destruction almost every day, so I saw it very close, and for me it created a kind of panic, because I really realized that I was not ready. So in a sense, these last 3 or 4 years, 3 years I think, have been helping me to get Brahmin life into perspective. Things that I used to give attention, I don't give attention anymore. Things that I started to value more because I started to see destruction very close. I think that this has been one of my main aspects nowadays, and related with that, you know, seeing with which souls or in which aspect still I have some debit, some karmic accounts, and especially in yoga, trying to clean that, or how can I say, I wrote to some people that I know that for some reason or another they don't have a good feeling towards me. I wrote to them, so from some I had good response, from others, no. But you're not trying to
clean. You want to clear out everything, settle everything.
Yeah, to settle everything.
Very interesting. Ken?
To be quite honest, I have been exploring, trying to think without talking to myself.
Interesting. Yes. Tell us a bit more. Without talking, you talk to us even if you don't.
No, the thing is that most of our thinking is a sort of an internal narrative that doesn't stop. About ourselves, about the world, about what we have to do, what we don't have to do, all of that. So I've been trying to be silent in that respect. It's not easy. We're so addicted to talking to ourselves. And it's possible to have feelings and experiences without words, I've noticed. You don't need to give words to things. Therefore, if you don't have words, then you're not talking to yourself in words, right? You just sort of, I don't know. It's hard to even to explain, let me tell you. But I've just been enjoying being very quiet because, but really quiet in that sense. But I don't even talk about it much even.
Mm.
But if I get some time just to sit or... I like to think a lot sometimes, but then there are times when I don't think a lot, like always trying to figure out how to explain something to others, but then I would spend some time just being completely quiet, enjoying, you know, enjoying the very simple things without too much thinking. I don't go... And it's interesting, I don't know, it seems like something very deep. That sort of deep silence, I have an inkling of it, that to have the experience of peace without thinking peace, or to have the experience of deep love without thinking necessarily of the words that go with love. So I'm sort of exploring it. I'm still in an exploration phase. I haven't figured it out yet.
Thank you.
But that's where I'm going.
I'm just...
Not thinking too much.
I'm just thinking of, you know, what they would say about Brahma Baba in those last months or however long, that it's like he was here but he was not here.
Yeah. I have that experience a bit.
So having, feeling Baba's pull.
Just now in ORC, I had the long periods of the whole day very free. And it's very, very beautiful grounds there too. And lots of peacocks. The sort of, how many peacocks are there?
They told about
50
peacocks. You get woken up in every morning. You know, that's the sound that I would think that the peacocks in the golden age have a better song. They sound like, you know, sweet crows. But it's like, get some time just to sort of drift around in that consciousness and enjoy the moment. That's probably, I don't know how to explain it actually.
Just being with Baba.
Just being peaceful, but not thinking about peace. Just being peaceful.
Something for us all to not think about, if you know what I mean. Right. Thank you. Okay, so thank you both very, very much. I think we've heard stories, we've heard something of depth, we've, I think, got a clearer vision in a sense of what makes you both who you are individually and how Baba has made you who you are. And so thank you to Baba and thank you to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
The other thing is that we're still in India time, so what's 5.5 hours from now? What is it?
2 a.m.
2 a.m. So you try and give a talk at 2 a.m. in the morning and then you'll understand why I'm not thinking too much.
Well, I think you all did pretty well. Thank you. Should we just have a few minutes of blissful silence? Thank you. Om Shanti.